Fuzzy TV.
Welcome to the Friday edition of MZTV. I am Martin Zender, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, voted that way for a reason. Rightly so. Second place was way behind, not even close. It was not even close. So the important announcement today is there is a conference the last day of May, which is May 31st, Friday, May 31st, Saturday, June 1st, and Sunday, June 2nd. That's right, a conference in Stone Mountain, Georgia. It is at a resort called Evergreen, the Evergreen Resort. It is being sponsored and put on for you by a hardworking man by the name of Chris Johnston. And he has worked tirelessly to make these reservations and to set this up. It's at a very nice place. You might consider it a bit pricey at this resort. However, if you don't want to stay at the resort, and I understand that, that's where the conference is going to be, and there are rooms at the resort. You can get yours now. I'm going to provide the link here in a second, but you can stay at the Days Inn in Stone Mountain, Georgia. It's about 10, 15 minutes from the park. There are options. There's even an RV park nearby, but this is a beautiful area of the country, and I know it's in Chris's heart that this is to be the last conference of the Eon, and he wants it to be at a beautiful spot. And why not be snatched away from the top of a mountain? Hey, we get a little head start there. Get a little head start. Get up there into the stratosphere a little bit at the top of Stone Mountain. Beautiful area. I've seen pictures of the resort. It's going to be lovely. So make your reservations today. It's about 37 minutes from the Atlanta airport. You'll figure out a way to get there, but there are directions on how to get there efficiently, I believe, using public transportation in the link. So the link is below. Look below this video, hit the tab that says Show More, and you will see a link to the newsletter written by Chris Johnston himself that explains everything. It will explain everything in excruciating detail because this man has left nothing to chance. However, he did tell me to tell you that between now and then, there will be tweaks. So stay tuned to this show. Stay tuned to MZTV, which you were going to do anyway. And if there's any updates, I will let you know. The park fee, Chris is going to try to work that out. So there might not be all the expenses that you see on the page. Things might be improved there. We will see. Christopher Johnston, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N. His email address is in the letter. I'll let you just hit the letter and find that for yourself. But he did tell me that I can give you his cell phone. So if you want to text him an RSVP, I'm sure he would appreciate it. His cell phone is 404-863-1743. Chris Johnston with a T there. His phone number again is 404-863-1743. And he would probably prefer an email. So send him an email. You can find that email address in the link below. Or simply go to martinzender.com. And from now until May, I will have a link. My sister, Kelly, and I will have a link at the top of my website. You can go there anytime, day or night. The website never sleeps, ladies and gentlemen. And hit the link, and you'll have the information at your fingertips. The Evergreen Resort, Stone Mountain, Georgia. April 17th is the deadline to make your reservations at the Evergreen Resort. And there is also a link in the link. How is that? I mean, we are technologically savvy. We put links in links, ladies and gentlemen. And I would not be surprised if you hit the link within the link, you get another link. Would not be surprised. We can do it. Information about how to contact the resorts. Chris has 30 rooms reserved. Get yours now. Supplies are running out. So today, I'm going to be the speaker. So far, I'm the only speaker we know is going to be there. If I end up being the only speaker, I will suck it up. I love it. I will go night and day for you. Night and day. Oh, yes, we're meeting on Friday. meet and greet Friday at the Evergreen Resort. Even if you're not staying there, be there. It'll start, I don't know, 5 p.m., something like that. We'll tweak it as we go. Meet and greet at the hotel, the Evergreen Resort. And I'm going to be a speaker. I might be the speaker, but we'll see who else we can conjure up here. Might have to call the Witch of Endor. We'll get Paul here for you. So I want to start with Matthew 25:41, because that is the verse that I was questioned on 2 days ago. Martin, this sounds like the lake of fire. Martin, this is the lake of fire. Martin, come on, admit, you know this is the lake of fire. But it says that people are being chastened there. So obviously the lake of fire is not as literal as you say. So much for your law of the metaphor. It's not nice to doubt the law of the metaphor. The law of the metaphor is unbendable. It is unyielding. The law of the metaphor will not tolerate dissension. It can't be assailed. It is impervious to attack. It is foundational. Founded upon laws of language. You can't do that to the law of the metaphor. Don't try it. The lake of fire and the second death are literal. Matthew 25:41 is not talking about the lake of fire. Let's go there just so I can prove it to you. Love to do it. I make sense for a living, and I'm not about to stop now. Verse 41, this is the judgment of the nations. Jesus brings the nations to him after he returns, his second coming, and all the nations are standing before him, and he's separating nations. This is not a judgment of individuals. This is a judgment of nations, known as the judgment of the sheep and the goats, or Concordance says the sheep and the kids. This is not sheep Bill and sheep Joe and kid Kelly and kid Mark. No, kid Rock. Oh, I don't know. Yeah. But it's not Kid Rock. No. These will be nations. It'll be the sheep nation of Russia. No, that'd be a goat nation, probably. The goat nation of Russia. What would be a sheep nation? There's not too many of them. What would you say? Like Holland? They're good people, right? These are nations gathered before him. Verse 41. Then he shall be declaring to those at his left, that is to those nations at his left, go from me, you cursed, into the fiery aeonian, made ready for the adversary and his messengers. This sounds for sure like the lake of fire. Even though it's not called the lake of fire, that should be the first clue that it's not the lake of fire. But the fact that it's made ready for the adversary and his messengers. But wait a minute, Revelation 20:10, there are no messengers here in the lake of fire. It is the beast, the adversary, and the false prophet. The adversary is named here, yes, but the beast and the false prophet would not be known as Satan's messengers. These are powerful spiritual beings. So that's my first problem here. But here's the only problem I need is in verse 46. And these, that is, those at his left, the nations at his left, the ones to whom he says, go from me, you cursed, into the fiery aeonian, made ready for the adversary and his messengers. Concerning those, verse 46, and these shall be coming away into chastening aeonian, yet the just into life aeonian. Chastening aeonian, chastening. They're going to be disciplined. Nobody, no human being is disciplined. And remember, these are nations, but nations are made of people. Nations are made of people. We're not talking specifically about people. We're talking about nations. But did I say nations involve people? Okay. So some nations go to the far corners of the earth. Some nations are situated around Jerusalem, near to the capital city, the holy city. That would be a good place to be in proximity to Jerusalem. But the goat nations will be far away to the four corners of the earth. And there they will experience chastening aeonian. Chastening. They will be like, it's not going to be pleasant out there. I mean, it's going to be pleasant compared to here. Listen, those nations at the four corners of the earth during the 1,000 years, they're going to have a better time weather-wise, atmospheric pressure-wise, food-wise, water-wise, no 5G-wise, no smog or anything-wise. They're going to have it better than the most ideally situated nation in this world. Let me say that again. The nations that are dispersed, that are suffering aeonian chastening during the 1,000 years, they're going to be in better shape than the best nations are today, because the whole earth is going to be like the Garden of Eden. It's going to be like the Garden of Eden. But they're imagine this. There are going to be people born during that time who are not going to know any different. They're going to have to look in their history books to read about Aeon 3. Can you imagine that? Kids are going to be growing up not knowing what Aeon 3 was. Like some kids, you know, today, they grow up not knowing what it was like to not have cell phones.
Well, let me tell you, sonny, we didn't have cell phones in my day.
They can hardly believe it. Can you imagine somebody telling their kid,
I went through Aeon 3.
What's Aeon 3, Daddy?
Oh, don't ask. Let me show you my battle scars.
Oh, boy, it's going to be rough. But they won't know any better. They won't know any better, so they're going to be bitching and griping out there. And this is where, in what way is this prepared for the adversary and his messengers? In what way? I'm going to tell you that in a second. But this can't be the lake of fire, because the lake of fire is the second death, and no one is chastened in death. Dead people aren't being chastened. They're dead. They're unconscious. They're not existing. You can't be chastened in death. That's how I know this is not the second death, and thus it is not the lake of fire. Simple. That ends it. Remember, I said you take the thing that you know, and we know that the lake of fire and the second death are literal. We know that. So this can't be the second death in the lake of fire. Can't be. And I would say to this gentleman who challenged me on this, it's like I try hard to teach scriptural principles of interpretation. You follow the laws. You follow the scriptural rules of interpretation. You follow the law of the metaphor. And when you do, you know that the second death is literal. That you know. So you come to this passage, which seems a little, fire aeonian. Is that the lake of fire, or is it not the lake of fire? You're not sure, are you? Well, what's the key function here? What is it about this? Well, is it that the goat nations are going to go into the fire aeonian? Oh, what happens to them there? Do they become crispy on the outside, tender on the inside? Crisp fried to a crackly crunch? No, they're chastened. Oh, can't be death then. Can't be the lake of fire. And it's not the lake of fire. This is figurative fire. Another rule. Literal if possible. I'm going to make this fire literal if I can. I really am. Go to me, cursed into the fire aeonian. I'm really going to make this literal. That's my default setting. I follow my own rules. It's not my rule anyway. It's a rule of scriptural interpretation. Oh, but I get down to verse 46. And these shall be coming away into chastening aeonian. Okay, so much for that. It's figurative fire, because there are living nations being chastened for the aeon. Aeonian chastening. It's the outer darkness. Does that mean it's dark all the time? No. It's going to be great weather there. No daylight savings time. Are you kidding me? That's one of the evils of the aeon. No daylight savings time on the millennial earth. So just quickly, let's go to Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 3 and 7 through 10, and I'll show you why this is prepared for the adversary and his messengers. Well, at the beginning of chapter 20, I perceived a messenger descending out of heaven, having the key of the submerged chaos and a large chain in his hand, and he lays hold of the dragon, the ancient serpent, who is the adversary. Oh, same one we're reading about in Matthew 25:41. And Satan binds him 1,000 years, casts him into the submerged chaos, which is going to be somewhere near New Jersey. And locks it, seals it over him till the 1,000 years should be finished. After these things, verse 3, he must be loosed a little time. Let's read about that in verse 7. And whenever the 1,000 years should be finished, Satan will be loosed out of his jail. He will escape the environs of New Jersey, probably around Hackensack. And he will be coming out to deceive all the nations which are in the four corners of the earth. Deceive who? All the nations. Who is Jesus Christ judging in Matthew 25? Nations. These are the goat nations that have been sent out to the outer darkness to endure aeonian chastening. And he will be coming out to deceive all the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog. People are wondering, where's Gog? People are asking me, Martin, who's Gog? What nation do you think today represents Gog? Gog is a spiritual name for what nation? For Russia? People used to think Gog was a name for Russia, and Magog, that was I don't know. Germany or something. Yeah, for sure. If there's going to be a Magog, I would say it would have to be Germany. But perish all these considerations, ladies and gentlemen, because these nations don't exist yet. They will exist at the end of the 1,000 years. Don't look for them on your map today. Don't look for some secret interpretation. These nations don't exist yet. But when they do, guess what they will be named? Yes, Gog and Magog. Literal, if possible. Is it possible for there to be a nation named Gog at the end of the 1,000 years? Hell yeah. What about Magog? If you can name a nation Gog, you can certainly name one Magog. So Satan goes out to the four corners to mobilize them for battle. And he gets up a number. He gets up a lot of people who are into it. And their number being as the sand of the sea. A lot of people are disgruntled out there. They're spoiled rotten. They don't know how good they have it. Just like Adam and Eve didn't know how good they had it. Because they're born into Eon 4. The only way they can know of Eon 3 is in the history books. But it's dry history to them. Just like us in high school. We read about the Middle Ages or the Ottoman Empire. And we're like, oh. In those days, they'll be at school. Kids will be reading about Eon 3. And back in the days when the weather went from hot to cold, the earth was tilted at a 23-degree tilt. They'll marvel at that. They will marvel that there was anything like a cell phone tower needed. They will marvel at things like air pollution and water pollution and mushroom clouds. They will be shown videos. They just won't be able to believe it. And they probably won't believe it because history repeats itself. And here we go. I ended up giving an entire talk on Matthew 25:41 and 46 in Revelation 20. I wasn't planning on doing that. Need to read the rest of the letter. I'm going to try to do it. Let's see how far I get. So the adversary and his messengers. It doesn't say here that he has his messengers with them, but it does say it in Matthew 25. So he gets up a rebellion, but it doesn't last long. They went up over the breadth of the earth and surround the citadel of the saints and the beloved city. And fire descended from God out of heaven and devoured them. So much for the little rebellion. Satan did not learn. They put him on probation. He gets out of the submerged chaos for 10 minutes and he's already out committing crimes. So much for the recidivism rate. Yeah. Boy, the recidivism rate for those released from the submerged chaos just isn't very good. Or does that mean it's good? I'm not sure which it is. One of the two. It's either good or not good for the recidivism rate. Okay. It's definitely not the lake of fire. Now, let's go back to the letter that I wrote to the man who doesn't like what God does. I'm not going to set stage again. I don't have time to do it. Life at the Great White Throne. So now I'm going to take your side. I'm saying to John, this guy who says, I don't like the fact that friends of mine, that nice people, are going to be a judge at the Great White Throne. Even though they're unbelievers. Okay, Martin, I'll give that to you. They're unbelievers. But I don't like it that they go to the lake of fire. I don't like it that they have to die again. So damn it, I'm going to find somebody who's going to sprinkle fairy dust on the lake of fire and make it second mortality where people can live again and grow again and have fun and learn about God and go to Sunday school and experience more that beautiful thing called mortality. Ah, that's going to be great. Phil Scranton did that for me, Martin. Not you. Not you. You picky little bastard. You just taught us the law of the metaphor. And you make the second death what it is. Death. Oh, that makes me sad. But again, yeah, I'm sad at the second death too. But that just sets the stage for me to be happy about the resurrection. So now I'm going to take your side, John. I am, but I first wanted you to see the emotional basis of your argument, your questioning of God's justice, your mistaking of death for punishment, and your unconscious glorification of death. Other than that, the guy's beautiful. I think you'll like this, John. The nice unbelievers at the Great White Throne, the Mother Teresa's and the Mahatmas, will be granted life there, albeit mortal life, while the unbelievers of more questionable character, i.e. jerks, will revisit death in the lake of fire. At God's throne, the great and the small are judged, quote, each in accord with their acts. Some acts will be good, John. Some acts will be evil. There is a scroll of life. A scroll of life. Quote, and if anyone was not found written in the scroll of life, he was cast into the lake of fire, unquote. It is reasonable to believe that because the scroll is consulted, there are names written here. Those whose names are recorded then are spared the second death, and thus they advance, albeit as mortals, to the new earth. The others return to the grave until the consummation. When we appear at the dais of Christ, we will all receive applause. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 5. Some will receive a wreath of righteousness. 2 Timothy 4:8. Some will see their evil works torched. 1 Corinthians 3, verses 10 through 15. Or maybe each of us will receive a little bit of everything. We know that the resurrection of life holds varying degrees of glory, just as there are various glories among the stars. 1 Corinthians 15, 40 and 41. As distinctions are recognized for believers at the dais of Christ, there are also distinctions recognized at the great white throne for unbelievers. This section is called Judged, Not Condemned. This is my second to the last section. How much time do I have? Ooh, it's going to be touch and go here. The argument may be forwarded that the distinctions are recognized, but the judgments are applied while the recently dead are alive, to be followed by the re-death of these folks by virtue not of their sins, but of their kinship to Adam. Yes, their kinship to Adam, just as happens with believers and the first death. I am willing to believe this, and I have believed it for years. It would be right of God, would be just of God, if everyone at the great white throne was adversely judged and went into the second death, because they're eventually going to be with God for eternity. No one would have any complaints if they lived for 50, 60, 70 years, maybe even a shorter amount of time than that, 10, 20, 30 years. They're dead, or there's no sensation, no consciousness, no awareness of passage of time. And they wake up at the great white throne. Then, depending on their acts, they're judged. Let's say everyone is adversely judged. What happens? They go back to sleep, for all intent and purposes. Sleep being a euphemism for death. They go back to death. And once again, there's no passage of time. And the next thing they know, the very next blink of the eye, is standing at the consummation, facing an eternity of bliss with God, with their Maker. Who would have any complaints? You live your life, you're judged for 2 minutes at the great white throne, you blink, and you're at the consummation. But now that scroll of life is looming large, I believe that there are only three vivifications corresponding with the three periods of vivification. Vivification is being made alive beyond the reach of death. Vivification is more than resurrection. Resurrection is the coming out of death of the body, vivification, but the body can return to the soil. Lazarus was resurrected, but he died again. If he had been vivified, he could not have died again. Many people have been resurrected from the dead. Many people were resurrected at the time of our Lord's death and resurrection. Jesus resurrected some people. Paul resurrected someone. Peter resurrected Dorcas. Who would name their daughter Dorcas? What was her last name? Porcus. No, can't be Dorcas. Porcus. Ridiculous. So, yes, there are only three periods of vivification. You find this in 1 Corinthians 15, 23 through 24. The first fruit, Christ. Thereupon, those who are Christ at his presence. This is the famous passage. As an Adam, all are dying, thus also in Christ shall all be vivified. Here's the three classes. The first fruit, Christ. He's the only one right now who is made alive beyond the reach of death. Thereupon, those who are Christ at his presence. This includes us first. We're pre-expectant in the Christ. We'll be snatched away. And three, the consummation, when death is abolished. Oh, also included in the second group are, at a later time, the circumcision, the former resurrection, when the saints of Israel will come from the dead. They're part of the group too, because they're also Christ in his presence. Yes, Christ has two presences. Presences? Yes. There's a secret presence. When he comes for us, some people laugh at this. There's no help for those people. Paul says, behold, a secret to you I am telling. We shall not all be put to repose. That means death. That's a euphemism for death, by the way. We shall not all be put to repose. It doesn't mean nap time. It doesn't mean we're not all going to be taking a nap at the snatching away. No, it means that we're not all going to die. Some will be alive. Someone recently posited that in between being alive and being snatched away, being made immortal, you would have to die in between. That is absurd. It's nowhere in the passage. Nowhere. It's not even hinted at. You're just going to go from mortality to immortality instantly. Do not pass death. Do not collect $200. There is no... How can anybody, why anyone would want to read that in there? You have to work hard to read that in there. I hope we die just for a split second. I want to taste death before I go from mortality to immortality. No, sorry. You get to miss out on that because we're not going to taste death. Some will not be put to repose. Anyway, who got me started on that? Look at my time. So at the consummation, then, at the end of the eons, everybody's going to be given immortality. That is, vivified, and that will include everyone who had been cast in the lake of fire, which is the second death. Why? Because death is going to be abolished. 1 Corinthians 15:26. So I'm not suggesting, John, that those whose names are recorded in the scroll of life, if indeed there are any, and I do believe there are many, doesn't mean they're made immortal. No, I'm suggesting that since only those whose names are not written in the scroll of life are cast into the lake of fire, which is the second death, the only alternative available for those whose names are recorded in the book of life is transference to the new earth, where they will sustain their lives as mortals with leaves from the log of life in the city of God. Sounds fantastic. I got a reference for you, as you knew I would. Revelation 22:2. I have more to say on this. I have to stop now. I'm sorry, but I have to. I got more of this letter. You know me. So I will look forward Monday to closing this chapter and on the second death, unless you have any further questions or considerations. Until then, have a great weekend. May the snatching away occur in 2.5 minutes.